and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Support for WMNF comes from our members in the Florida Law Group, protecting the rights of the wrongfully injured since 1984. The Florida Law Group is dedicated to creating strong and lasting connections with their clients and our community. More at thefloridalawgroup.com. And WMNF's Fall Pledge Drive is October 4th, which is tomorrow, through the 11th. But you can support the last local radio station in Tampa Bay right now. Just go to WMNF.org and hit this show's tip jar. Or call 813-238-8001. And thank you for keeping it local. Good afternoon. You are listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. This is community radio from West Central Florida, and this is Executive Session. Each Monday through Thursday at this time, you and I take a look at what's happening in the White House and around the executive branch of your United States government. I'm John Gilmore, joined in the studio today by Mr. Adam Bax. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
And we are going to lead off, as we do on Wednesdays, with an episode of Everyday Ethics. You did it in high school. It happened in college. Do you bear a permanent record of everything you've ever done throughout your life? Interesting question, given our current conversation. You can reach us at 813-239-9663. I'm sure that there will be folks who will be wanting to weigh in on this when we finish with the episode. You can reach us by email anytime at dj@wmnf.org and by text at 813-433-0885. And you can also search for the Executive Session Facebook page and like and follow that, because we often have discussions on the Facebook page. And as frequently as possible, we introduce the subject matter for the day on the page. So you can see, sometimes there are links on the page that you can see to examine material that we're going to be using. So let's get back down and get to Everyday Ethics.
Should we all have a permanent record? This is Everyday Ethics.
Everyday Ethics is a production of WMNF Tampa in conjunction with the Poynter Institute. Poynter, a global leader in journalism. Additional support is provided by NYU Langone Medical Center, one of the nation's premier academic medical centers devoted to patient care, education, and research.
Hi, and welcome to Everyday Ethics. It's a podcast where we talk about things that happen in everyday life and take them apart ethically and give you some things to think about when it comes to taking an ethical stand yourself. When I say we, I am Craig Kopp. I'm in the studios of WMNF Radio in Tampa, Florida. I am joined by Art Kaplan. He's a medical ethicist. He's at the Langone Medical Center in New York City, although today I think he's in Connecticut. Hello, Art.
I am in Connecticut. Hello.
And media ethicist Kelly McBride. She's at the Poynter Institute, just across the bay from me, really, in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hello, Kelly.
Hey, Craig.
Well, certainly there's been some talk about bringing stuff up from 35, 40 years ago, back when someone was in high school, and whether or not that's fair to people.
I'm not questioning that Dr. Ford may have been sexually assaulted by some person in some place at some time. But I have never done this to her or to anyone.
Dr. Ford, with what degree of certainty do you believe Brett Kavanaugh assaulted you?
100%.
100%.
I am innocent of this charge. I intend no ill will to Dr. Ford and her family.
All right. So, you know, we used to, I certainly remember from the days of being in public school, you know, hey, that's going to go on your permanent record. And it struck fear into the hearts of me and everybody else. But now we're looking at things where, obviously, the Brett Kavanaugh case, where somebody comes forward and says, you know, back in high school, this guy did something horrible to me. He's now a 50-something-year-old man, you know, whose public record led an exemplary life. Does that count, Kelly McBride?
Well, sure, it counts because we all have a permanent record now. So I guess the question is, how much does it count, not does it count? We are judged all the time by the sins of our past. And fair or not, the younger you are, the less able you are to separate yourself from the culture around you that may be sending signals about values that are different from society, and make your own choices and own your own actions. That's why we have a juvenile justice system, right? We presume that until the age of 18, that when you do make a bad choice, that you should be rehabilitated. You know, obviously we're talking about the hearing for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. And so it's really silly to talk about this in the abstract when we have this case right in front of us. But I think when you're asking this question, it's not yes or no, should you be held accountable for what you did when you were a teenager? I think it's how serious was your digression when you were a teenager? Do you admit it? Do you own it? And what have you done in between now and then? And even if you can sort of come out on the positive side of all of those things, I still think that it's not wrong to hold somebody account for what they did way back in the past.
Well, in the Kavanaugh case, I guess because it's a U.S. Supreme Court justice position that he's going for, I guess character matters, and in your entire life is counted as part of that.
Exactly. I mean, it's not like we're putting him on trial. The statute of limitations for a sexual assault has clearly expired in this case. It's important to ask, in what context are you holding him to account? And in this case, it's probably more important than who you elect as president. This is a lifetime appointment.
Art?
Boy, am I ambivalent. I certainly believe that you are responsible for what happened in your past. I think, as Kelly said, you gotta own it. I don't like the fact that in the Kavanaugh battle, he's just denied, because I can't imagine why the woman would come forward and make the accusation, and in fact talk about it before his nomination, unless something happened. I mean, I was kind of waiting for the, I'm sorry, I don't remember from Kavanaugh, I'm sorry, I don't know exactly what happened. I could have been drinking. I may have mistreated you, and I apologize, but I really have moved on. But I wanted to get some ownership, not just never happened, didn't happen, smear campaign, all political. You know, when I was in junior high, we had an assignment to do a book review, and I didn't feel like reading a book, and I actually made up a book. And my friends from junior high will all remember this. I called the book The Balkans. And I wrote this review about the Balkans book and how good it was and telling us all about the history of that region. Turned it in, got an A. In fact, teacher was so excited about it and thought it was such a good book review that she thought maybe we should look at the book.
That is brilliant. Now, that teacher knew that it was a fake book, right?
So my friends from junior high are well aware that I do ethics. And periodically, they will bring up to me the Balkans. I'll fess up to it. I just did here. I didn't fess up to it in the seventh grade. I mean, I got through the whole year saying the book was out. Somebody took it. We were looking for a new copy. I mean, it was a lie that spiraled, right? Just got worse and worse. So am I accountable? Yeah. Did it mean that I plagiarized today? No. Did it make me sensitive to honesty and sort of academic work? Yeah, a bit, because I wound up getting caught and I had to sort of tap dance all the way around it. So I don't know that it would disqualify me from becoming a tenured professor because I have that in my past. And it was seventh grade. And there are some of my friends who still admire the whole thing to this day and say, that was great.
This is a fabulous example.
So I admit it. I did it. I'm not proud of it. It was funny. It amuses me still to think about it. But, you know, it's on the permanent record, as you said. I'll own it. But I don't think I should be punished extremely for it today. I sometimes will use it. I used it with my son as an example of something not to do. Told students about it.
Right. I mean, this should not disqualify you from tenure, right?
Right.
To me, I'm listening to it and thinking, well, that frames how you ended up in the ethics business.
Well, no.
but you can talk about, so first of all, who did you harm in doing that?
Well, I guess the institution of, you know, seventh grade scholarship or something, or punishing the people who did the real work. I got by,
exactly. Right. You caused a slight harm to all of your fellow students, because if the grade was on a curve, or even if it wasn't, you got an A for not doing anything, and they worked and did the work and got the grade that they got. So you essentially, it's like a small form of stealing, right? Mm-hmm. You took mm-hmm. something. It's very different than assaulting somebody, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you told me that you robbed somebody because you wanted their bike, I would think very differently of you.
Yeah, harder case.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
And I would say mm-hmm. that you would need to demonstrate, if you had done something where you physically injured somebody or caused somebody significant distress, then I would want to see some way that you could acknowledge the harm that you caused and a record of not causing that harm in other situations.
So that applies to, say, in the state of Florida, Kelly, where you are and I am, if you were 17 and you're now 50, the likelihood is, if you were convicted of a felon for stealing $300 or more and you've paid your debt to society, you still can't vote in this state.
Context is important and consequences are important, right? Not being able to vote is disenfranchising you from the democratic process, as opposed to not getting a job. If you're 17 and you have a convicted felony in your past, somebody may not hire you. And that does not ruin your life, because other people will hire you. There's a difference between a consequence that affects your ability to engage in society and a consequence that is simply an opportunity that is no longer available to you.
By the way, the same thing applies to things like dishonorable discharge from the armed services. That kind of follows you around on job applications forever.
Right, and it impacts your ability to tap into the benefits of being in the military.
Correct.
Right.
So my point would be, I think at some point you ought to let the felon vote. You could argue about, is it 5 years after their sentence or 10 years or a week? But I think you shouldn't get disenfranchised forever. You're still a citizen, even if you've committed a crime. I don't think it's irrelevant for the job interviewer to ask about what's the deal here with your dishonorable discharge or your something else that you got punished for or convicted of. I'm not sure it ought to be an automatic disqualification. That I would argue.
The real bottom line here is that if you've got something in your past and it comes up in your present 35 years later, this first step toward proving that you've rehabilitated or you've changed your ways or you've matured is to be out front about the Balkans, as it were.
So what are the crappy things that you did, Craig?
Do I have to do this?
I'll give you mine if
okay.
you give me yours.
All right. Got one on top of mine so I can go back through. And
So I, as I started to drive, used to do this crappy thing where if there was a puddle and there was somebody walking, I would drive through the puddle and splash the person, which is a horrible, nasty, obnoxious thing to do.
When I was in sixth grade, I just could not get to math. My mother was a secretary in the school system. The teacher's book with the answers in the back ended up in my hands.
Ah, you cheated.
Mm-hmm.
So cheating is interesting, and we should do a whole episode on cheating, because cheating is rampant.
And by the way, let me go on record in saying I think the Balkans was bad, but I certainly don't want to be in this podcast with you two anymore.
I had so many sleepless nights over the years about that.
Really? What did you think? That somebody was going to come and back
no,
and
that
catch you?
No, that it wasn't worth it.
Oh, wow.
That it just, it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it.
I literally
quit advanced mathematics in high school and went back and took all the math from freshman year on in my junior and senior year just because I couldn't. So it haunted me.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about splashing people from a puddle, right? Like, I feel like I'm so embarrassed that I did that. I'm ashamed.
He no longer will drive in the rain.
Well, I'm very sensitive about it. Like, I'm always like, you know, when I see someone walking and there's puddles, which is like every day here in Florida, I'm really sensitive about it now because I don't want to inadvertently do it. But this wasn't inadvertent. This was deliberate behavior that I thought was funny that was really, really crappy.
I want to jump in with a different question. We were arguing about forced sexual mistreatment in the Supreme Court appointment, which I think is important because it does tell you about character, and how you respond to it tells you something about the person. I was not happy to see Brett Kavanaugh getting angry and yelling at people and all that. I thought it put him in a bad light and revealed that he sort of had a nasty temper and was self-centered in a certain way. But what do you say about people over time? You learn that they never visit their mom in a nursing home or their grandmom. They haven't done it in 20 years. And they tell you that and just kind of hangs there as a fact. Person that should be your friend, does it impact their character, your judgment of them? I mean, to me, it does a little bit. I start to think, oh, that's not, I don't know. That's somebody I'm not sure I want to be so friendly with.
Well, it's a tough call. It's not the same as teenage behavior.
Well, this is current. You're making that choice now.
Well, I mean, they're making that choice now. Over years and years, they haven't done it. And I don't know if they didn't do it because their parent abused them, or they had a falling out war, or they don't feel like it, or they're just lazy. But it definitely sends up a red flag. I don't mean they didn't do it last year. I mean, they haven't done it for 20 years.
I would want to know more information. I would really want to know more. Parent-child relations are complicated, even once everybody's an adult.
And I had a complicated one. It's not that I didn't go visit my mother, but when my mother died, we weren't talking.
Wow.
Yeah.
I partly brought it up because it seems to me, if you're talking about behavior, is it over a period of time, you know, 20 years? Is it the one drunken night when I acted like an idiot? It is partly, do you own it? And it is partly, what did you do? And then I think it's partly, how long did you do it?
And there's a difference between not doing something and doing something, right? You know, the Catholics talk about sins of omission as well as sins of commission. That is like a sin of omission, that you didn't do something that you should have done. They're easier to rationalize in your own head because it's not like you make the choice, like, I'm not going to visit my mom for 20 years. That person never said that. What they said probably is, I can't do it this week. I can't do it this month. Then you get into this psychological thing where you feel guilty and there's a hurdle to get over, right? Like, I haven't done it for 6 months. Now I feel really crappy. I haven't done it for 2 years. Now I can't imagine how I'd start doing it. I mean, I'm more compassionate about that and less judgy because, first of all, the complication of we don't know what happened, but then also just the psychology of a sin of omission, that's a harder psychology to get around. A sin of commission, something that you did, even if you're drunk and you're incapacitated, you actively made a choice to do something, right? Like, I actively made a choice to drive through a puddle and splash somebody.
So let me toss up one more. So I'm watching this hearing, and he said, she said kind of stuff. And I think in the spirit of what Kelly said about having empathy for somebody who couldn't do the visit and gotten a pattern, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I've had in high school, for sure, in college, women in my room and sort of fooling around, and it could have been misconstrued, but if somebody said stop, or I don't want to, or I want to go home or something, I did. I may say I did it grudgingly, but I did. But I know plenty of my friends in both settings who did not. And I started to wonder, so how much of the response to Kavanaugh is guilty men thinking, oh, I've been there, I did that?
A lot. I think that many, many men have been in a situation where they've gone further than we now consider acceptable, right? The standard over 30 years has definitely changed.
Yep.
Absolutely.
These people are my contemporaries, right? And I went to a Catholic school. I'm pretty sure that had she reported that to authorities, nothing would have happened.
I'm equally sure.
Right?
What are they going to say? What's the harm?
Exactly, right? Because that was not considered sexual assault back then. It may have been considered sexual assault by the way the law was written, but certainly not by the way the law was applied.
Absolutely. If you didn't have penetration or something like that, the cops would have just laughed at you.
Exactly, yeah. So the context, and I think this is important for both of them, right? The context of how we interpreted that sort of behavior 35 years ago, it actually makes it more believable that it happened. And it's why I wish that he would acknowledge that he was there and something happened, because it seems to me, if that's what we're trying to figure out, there's no consequences for him other than he may not become the Supreme Court justice.
Kelly, do you think if mores and morals change, and in this case, the Me Too movement is an improvement, I think, over what it was 35, 40, 50 years ago, vis-a-vis men's conduct toward women and how they felt they had privileges, whether in the workplace or in the bedroom or dating or whatever. To me, that's part of the reason I said I mixed views about what to make of Mr. Kavanaugh, because it's clearly wrong, and I think the current ethic is better and is moving in the right direction, but that wasn't what it was 35 years ago, and it doesn't excuse it, but it gives me a little more willingness to sort of say, that was the way it was at the time. And I mean, it's kind of like saying, people beat their wives at the time and no one seemed to protest that. And I don't want to excuse that either, but we have changed, and I think for the better. And how does that weigh in the equation?
Well, isn't the bottom line ethically here, it seems to me, in this entire conversation and us bearing our souls on some minor sins, really, that you have to admit that you did it?
I don't think that's the bottom line, but I think it weighs in the equation to our
question.
That
it's given you personal reflection on your action.
You have to be able to own and acknowledge your participation, your own agency.
I think that's the starting point.
Yes.
It may not be the full evaluation, but it is the starting point.
But the rest of the evaluation is, how have you behaved over time? What else is out there? And I think the thing that has the most weight is, what has your behavior been in the last 5 or 10 years? How do you treat people now? First of all, it's very hard to see how people really treat people. There are only a few people who know that. But it's knowable. You can figure it out.
Well, we could add in one other sad dimension to this assessment of people, and that is, if you wander around universities and medical centers like I do, you see all kinds of names on buildings. And if you probe often into the names on the building, it doesn't look good. You know, we've got a bunch of buildings all around America named after the Sackler family. That's the group that pushed opioids upon us and probably caused one of the worst epidemics that the United States ever had. But there they are. They're on the building.
I spent a lot of time in a city called Cincinnati, and one of their greatest regrets was naming a street Pete Rose Way.
Did they change it?
Nope.
So the other ethical question here is, can someone who did something horrible be redeemed?
Well, if they buy a big enough building, apparently.
Well, you can certainly change the public narrative. I mean, isn't that why the Rockefellers and the Fords and everybody gave away all their money and put their names on things, is because they had a bad reputation?
Not always, but frequently, yeah. No, there's a lot of it.
I think that I would be hopeless if I didn't think that there's some redemption. Do you get to be on the Supreme Court? Not necessarily. But you certainly can be redeemed. I think there are plenty of examples of people. They may not have gone the same path they would have if information wouldn't have come out, but they led exemplary lives, and that's the redemption.
Right, and you can look at other examples. I think that Ted Kennedy is the best example. He had a horrible, horrible sin of commission in his early life. And he redeemed his reputation by a lifetime of good work, And that never went away. It was mentioned in his obituary. There's a movie out about it. It's not like he ever expected that we would stop talking about that. And we didn't.
And we shouldn't.
But if you look at the body of his work and his reputation and how he was talked about at his funeral and what his obituary said, there was a lot more. It is not the thing that defined him.
Well, it did in one sense. It's why he was not running for president.
Exactly. Yeah, right? That is exactly the point. That is the point.
He said,
it may prevent you from doing certain things. It shouldn't prevent you from doing everything. It doesn't mean your life is over. It means that you have been held to account.
For Kelly McBride and Art Kaplan, I'm Craig Kopp, and this is Everyday Ethics, knowing the difference between what you have a right to do and what's right to do. Everyday Ethics, engineered today by Dwayne Terry. It's produced and edited by Dustin Hapley, and our researcher is
Christina Sokoranku.
Everyday Ethics, a conversation about your permanent record and how much does it count? How much does it count? Should you be accountable for every single act you have committed throughout your entire life? 813-239-9663 will be right with you at the phones. And you can reach us at the in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. If you call 813-239-9663, talk to Jeff Haynes this afternoon and get you ready to come on in here and have your say.
Todd Snyder is the barefoot troubadour whose annual WMNF shows are always a major celebration for his legion of fans.
Think I'm an alright guy.
Snyder's concerts are completely unpredictable.
B-double-E-double-R-U-N, Baron.
Get your tickets now. Todd Snyder at Skipper Smokehouse, Friday, October 12th, 8 p.m. More info at WMNF.org.
Support for WMNF comes from our members and Happy Feet Plus. For those having foot, leg, knee, and back pain, Happy Feet Plus offers footwear solutions fashioned to make your feet happy. And is a full-service shoe store, including a complimentary foot scan and analysis at their 10 Bay Area locations.
All right. And not only that,
but also the WMNF Fall Pledge Drive is October 4th. That's tomorrow through the 11th. But you can make your support for the last local radio station in Tampa Bay right now. Just go to WMNF.org and hit the show's tip jar or call 813-238-8001. Thanks for keeping it local.
All right. We have a lot in the last week or so been dealing with this, and it's an ethical question, the ethical question of your or my permanent record. The acts that we have committed throughout our lives, and do they continue to exert influence in your life? 813-239-9663 will get you in contact with Mr. Jeff Haynes, and you can weigh in on permanent records, and specifically, what do you think the relevance is to the current conversation for the confirmation of Mr. Brett Kavanaugh, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, to the Supreme Court? Right now, we're going to go and we're going to talk to Elizabeth, who says she has a question. Elizabeth, good afternoon. You're in executive session, and you have a question.
Thank you, John. Yes, I do. The question is, what the hell is wrong with us, the American people?
Think a little bit
about who we elected to be our president this time.
Uh-huh.
What is his permanent record? He's a liar. We know that. He was not a self-made businessman. He inherited most of it. As a businessman, how many times did he bankrupt himself, leaving people on the hook?
Mm-hmm. I think the answer to that question is something like six, and I believe that the there is a relatively strong indication that Daddy Trump bailed him out over and over again, that he would break stuff, and that his father would come in and do things like buy $3.5 million worth of poker chips.
His daddy didn't really buy him the election, though.
No.
In a sense, yes, I suppose he did, by propping him up in that fashion. But we the people put that man.
Okay, I was just about had me going there for a second.
Well, you notice I paused.
You seem to be searching for words. Yes, you did. I can identify.
Well, I got a good one, but that's all right. Anyway, he's considered to be, you know, a USA, that's the best country in the world, and he's president thereof.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on.
Mm-hmm.
That's horrible.
Well, I'll tell you what, Elizabeth, we are coming up on a pivotal point where that question is very applicable. Mm-hmm. And that the nation as a whole will have an opportunity to weigh in on their particular answer. There will be millions and millions of individual answers.
I hope they
to
are.
To that question.
Answers that are good.
Yeah.
Well, of course, there we are. Who interprets good?
Mm-hmm.
Who's it good for?
Well, you know, the economy is doing very well, and it seems to be that if you examine the surge here, that you'll find out that an awful lot of what is going on that's really good is highly concentrated in very small places.
Mm-hmm.
And those people are just doing fabulously well.
Absolutely. But it doesn't trickle down very much.
No, we found out during the Reagan presidency that there is something that trickles down.
Yeah.
But most of us don't want to be under it. So
quite true.
Yeah,
but the major portion of us kind of wound up under it anyway.
Well, here's the thing now. We do these cycles where there are booms, but over and over again, it's almost like we get so intoxicated by the boom that we don't notice what happened the next day.
Oh.
And that is the bust. And the last one that we had was going on 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be... and who was it? Gore Vidal, I think it was, who said that USA stands for the United States of Amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
because we have a tendency to forget our history, even when it's recent and very... I mean, you know, I can speak only for myself, and that, and in that episode... I watched a lot of money go away.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about it for me was nobody could explain where it went.
No.
You know, it was there. It was there. And then it was gone.
Yeah.
And I kept that, and there were people that were managing the accounts and stuff like that, and I kept going, where'd it go? You know, it was like, no, there was actually, that was money. That wasn't on paper. That was actual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's not there. Now, I don't believe things disappear in the physical universe.
But they can be made to
disappear. They can be made to appear to disappear, and a good deal of my cash appeared to disappear. So I know that can be accomplished, and I think David Copperfield has adequately demonstrated, you know, that such feats are possible.
I don't know, John. Do we get what we deserve? Do we ask for it?
Well, here's the thing. The privilege of democracy includes the prerogative of making serious mistakes.
Yeah, but not all the time.
Well, the other side of that is the prerogative to correct them.
Yeah.
So we shall see what happens. We shall see what happens. And the system always responds to participation. Okay. So whoever's participating, huh?
There it is.
Yeah, whoever's participating, they get what they're participating for.
Mm-hmm.
So if a lot of the voters don't participate, and the ones who do participate can be influenced by people who have specific interests, then those people get their specific interests looked at.
That's true.
And
it's fancy language, but what you're saying is get off your duff and get out there and vote.
Yeah, I think that's a good reduction. I think that's a fine reduction of that particular viewpoint. I do.
All right, John. I appreciate your listening to me.
All right, Elizabeth. I appreciate
you
calling in.
And alligator.
All right, we'll talk again. Sure enough. All right, 813-239-9663. Get you in contact with Mr. Jeff Haynes. We have just been listening to an episode of Everyday Ethics that was about permanent record. The things you did in high school, the things you did in college. Should they actually follow you through your life? Should you be accountable for them? By the way, we're not going to stage a confessional here. I mean, unless you want to have that conversation, which is, you know, perfectly okay. We will cloak your conversation in anonymity if that's what you wish. But we're looking to find out. We're in a part of a conversation for a confirmation to the highest court in the land that will land a man on that court adjudicating constitutional parameters for the rest of his life. He is going to be among those that decide what the Constitution means for the rest of us. So are we, and we're looking at somebody has come forward and accused him of some very heinous acts. As a matter of fact, a few people have. So those were 30-some years ago. And so what is it? What does that look like to you? What does that look like to you? So Jeanette says, if you've done something morally reprehensible, then you'll pay the price through karmic law, according to Jeanette. And one should have repercussions from their past in their careers as well. So there's a viewpoint for you. And we're going to go and we're going to talk to Bob in Town and Country. Bob, good afternoon. You're in executive session. You have the floor.
Good afternoon. I might wait to feed a bunch of stray cats, but I'll tell you what. I was listening to your little dialogue there about the economy. And, you know, first I'll just touch quickly on Judge Kavanaugh.
Okay.
Nothing in his life in all these past years. All the people I knew that went to school in Yale, and I did, well, I spent a year and a half there. But anyways, people that are top of the class aren't, you know, usually that type of person.
Let me ask you a question.
I'm going to get to the point.
Okay, go ahead. No, I got a question about Yale, so don't let me forget it, okay?
No, I got to go. Yeah, the atmosphere around there as far as partying, there's Toad's Place and all that. Generally, they are not like crazy partiers like the rest of the people. But anyways, here's the thing. All the people I knew in character, and especially since nobody they're asking me to believe a lot. And I get it. If you're on the left, you know, you'll find any reason to believe it. And I'm sure it's the same on the right.
And I don't think that's true, Bob.
They're asking me, like you said, with the other accuser, what he did in the car, forced her to perform oral. You know, none of that stuff, running a gang rape ring. You're asking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That a man who accomplished that and does all he does did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know people do crazy things as a kid. But first and foremost, I believe it's a sham. But as far as the economy, lifting the regulations, people are getting more in their checks. They're going to get bigger tax returns, and that's going to be everybody if you're working over the table. And
not so far.
What do you mean?
I mean just exactly what not so far means.
Has it? I'm on government right now. I've been on disability for over a year, but, you know, well, if it isn't, it's not, whatever. But people are going to be voting. Well, come on. The tax rate went down for as far as your paycheck. So.
And 83% of that went to people at the top 1% of the economy.
No, I'm not talking about percentage, because people who make more pay more, and they do pay a big amount of taxes. It doesn't, you know, across the board they did it. If you have to pay less taxes in your pay, if you're
who do you think can afford to pay taxes? Somebody that makes $10 or $12 million a year, or somebody that makes $50,000?
Listen, you're not listening.
People, I am listening, because I just replied to something you just said.
$25, $30, $40 more in a paycheck on an average job, and with the extra child deduction, people are going to get more in their tax return. And that's, you know, that's everybody. But listen, it's not who can afford it. If someone's rich, like I said, they're already, you know, what they say, you know, the top 1% pay 90% of the taxes. You know, people who have a couple kids, if they're making 30, 40 a year, by the time they get with their deductions, they're not really paying anything. They just basically loaning the government money. You know, so that's, you know, I've been in business where I made a lot of money. And I'm going to tell you, you pay a lot of taxes, and in Connecticut, too. The income every quarter. So I know what it is. And I'm going to tell you, a lot of people I know are making the money.
Well, good for them.
Doing better. People are doing better. And I'm going to tell you, they can, that's one point. You can sell it, but I don't hear the average American person disputing the economy and that it's good. It's basically pundits as yourself. People are. It's just
I can honestly say that I've never been called a pundit in my life.
If you're making minimum wage and you're a day laborer, you may not see it as much. But I'm telling you, if you're doing anything average in this world, you're doing better. People have more of their money in the pocket.
All right. You know, look, listen, Canada, that's good. We're going to
while all this stuff is going on, instead of working on immigration or all the other infrastructure, we're dragging stuff like this out.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bob, I got to go because we got a whole bunch of people that are waiting to get on the line. But let me tell you something. As far as it's concerned, what we're dealing with is somebody who's going to be on the Supreme Court for the rest of his life. So I think we need to exercise extreme care.
Well,
listen, I appreciate your viewpoint. We got to go, and we got a little business to take care of, and we will be back with you. I hope that we get to talk again. 813-239-9663. We are going to take a very, very quick last break and get along to the finale of this conversation, which looks like it is going to be very, very interesting.
It's coming. It's just weeks away, and our democracy depends on it. Tuesday, November 6th is Election Day in Florida and across our nation. Your vote makes a difference. The difference between intolerance and everyone's voice being heard. Between cruel government decisions and caring public officials. Your vote makes the difference. The board of the Nathan B. Stubblefield Foundation urges you to vote on November 6th.
Damon Fowler has a great new album, The Whiskey Bayou Session, produced by Tab Benoit. WMNF is presenting the Damon Fowler album release party. And it's a cool double bill with the Nighthawks, the legendary Washington, D.C. blues and rock and roll band. Two blues rock and WMNF favorite bands, the Damon Fowler Band and the Nighthawks, at Skipper's Smokehouse, Saturday, October 20th.
Support for WMNF comes from our members and Goodwill, one of the original recyclers. Did you know that it takes nearly 1,800 gallons of water to produce one pair of jeans? When those jeans are donated to Goodwill, they're sold in Goodwill stores, and all proceeds support employment services for the people in the local community. Goodwill shoppers and donors promote a greener community. More at goodwill-suncoast.com. Support for WNF comes from our members and WEDU PBS. WEDU will honor nonprofit organizations and volunteers during the WEDU Be More Awards. Applications and nominations will be accepted through October 30th. Information is online at WEDU.org/be more.
Hi, this is Larnell Scott with a WMNF community announcement. Superheroes are fun to watch at the movies. However, there are almost 1,000 abused and neglected children in Pasco and Pinellas counties waiting for real-life superheroes to volunteer as guardians ad litem and become their voices. These precious children need volunteers to help them find safe, permanent homes. Guardian ad litem volunteers become superheroes to our community's children. You may learn more at herotoachild.org.
And be sure and stay around after the session this afternoon. Mr. Mike Hawkins is going to bring you the All Souls edition of It's the Music this afternoon. And he is going to carry you through the afternoon and deliver you unto the traffic jam. And we're going to bring you home safe and sound. And I also want to remind you that tomorrow we are going to go into fundraising mode. We are going to be asking for actual money here. And because that's how your community radio station actually continues to be your community radio station, is because over the last generation and 10 years, you have supported it. So this is your chance to continue to do that. We'll be asking for money on the air tomorrow. You can support executive session actually by going to wedu.org and clicking on the tip jar. Or you can support the station in the same fashion. So right now we're going to go back to the phones. It's 813-239-9663. Mr. Jeff Haynes back there getting ready to answer the phones for you. Right now we're going to go and talk to John in St. Pete. Good afternoon. You're in executive session.
Hello. How are you today?
So far, not bad. What's up?
I was just amazed by your last caller. I just wanted to bring up one point. Everybody thinks that, you know, he's going to serve for life, but there has been one impeachment.
I think it was in 1807.
No, it was 1805.
Okay.
I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Good for you.
And it's interesting. It was Justice Samuel Chase in 1805 who was appointed by George Washington.
Mm.
And the House of Representatives passed articles of impeachment against him, but he was acquitted by the Senate.
Yeah.
And the reason that he was impeached was because of his bias. He was extremely biased against the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't as if he had committed a crime. It was his bias that got him impeached.
Yeah.
So there is another mechanism that can be used to remove this guy. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you brought up something, because we had someone who asked the community yesterday if there was this anything comparable to a citizen's initiative to amend the Constitution of the United States. In Florida, you can do a citizen's initiative and put a ballot measure up for consideration in the election. And he was wondering whether or not there was any kind of mechanism like that that paralleled that for the people an amendment in the Constitution. I'm not aware of any, but
I've never seen anything like that either, but
yeah, I haven't either.
We need to make some changes, like to the Electoral College.
I
think something's wrong with that when you get beat by 3 million votes and you win.
Yeah, that's not the first time that's happened. That's been that's happened a couple times in the last few cycles, I think.
Exactly. Well, I just wanted to get that one point out there and let somebody else talk. Thank you for your time.
Sure enough. Thanks, John, and we'll talk again. 813-239-9663 as we stand on the threshold of the lightning round, and we're going to talk to Clifford in Tampa. Good afternoon, Clifford. You're in executive session, and you have the floor.
Good afternoon. How are you?
So far, not bad. We'll know more later.
Hey, listen, I'm very, very upset with this person.
Mm-hmm.
And agree that he is not the victim. The ladies are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you still continue to treat them as his counterpart, whose name I won't call, what do you call him, 45 minus 1? The Gump?
Okay.
He just added to his club.
Uh-huh.
My God, what does it take to see that you did this to this woman? Mm-hmm. Those ladies are the victims. He's not the victim. You say he's being victimized by the Democratic Party when you did it to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, when somebody tells the truth about your conduct and you think you're being victimized, maybe it's not them you should be looking at.
Exactly. Those ladies are the victims. He's not the victim at all. Except that he'll get away scot-free, and he's going to sit there on a bench for life and write laws concerning everything that concerns a female and her right to life.
Yeah, well, he's going to have a hand in deciding what the Constitution means for the next potentially 35 years.
Well, he's not the victim. The ladies are.
All right. I believe you have made your point, Clifford. Thank you very much for bringing it to the executive session, and we'll talk again.
Thank you.
Sure enough. All right, and we're going to go talk to Rod in Largo. Good afternoon, Rod. You're in executive session. You have the floor.
Well, I think Mr. Kavanaugh doesn't have the demeanor to be a Supreme Court justice after watching his rebuttal and show on the, you know, when they were investigating, confirming the deal the other day. I don't think a Supreme Court justice should act like that. It was made to me a point that, to me, that's like a job interview. And if you went to a job interview and acted the way he did, almost assuredly you would not get that job.
Yeah. The American Bar Association actually has a written kind of code. And I saw a paragraph of it reproduced the other day, and it said, and it was about the demeanor of judges. And sure. And basically, in somewhat different language, they said about the same thing you just did.
Yeah, didn't the American Bar Association say they wanted him to pull him out from being nominated?
I believe they withdrew their endorsement, and I believe so did the instructors at Yale.
Right.
Yeah. So he has,
That's got to say something. And then to that guy that called, the Trump supporter guy, about everybody's getting more money, I don't know. Of course, he's on disability, so number one, I wouldn't know how he would know. But being on disability, I would think that would be the next thing that Trump, with Social Security and stuff, that's the next thing they're going to go after, because they've given the tax breaks to the wealthy, so they got to come up with some money somehow, and I would guess Social Security, Medicare, and disability will be the next things that are going to get cut.
I have seen indications that their sights are set on just exactly where you said they were.
Yeah, and I don't understand how these Trumps, for the very person who's on the disability, would support somebody like that to cut their own throat. I don't understand the thinking behind that. Like, I know you've heard every analogy in the book, but, you know, putting the fox in charge of the hen house. why would you do that? It defies logic.
I quite concur. And I'll tell you what, I keep going back to the same thing. We are coming up to a pivot in the route here in November, and we have an opportunity to begin the course change if we want to make, you know, if we want to change course. Now, like I said yesterday, ships change course very slowly. It takes a little while to get that thing to move. So, but it doesn't ever move if you don't turn the wheel.
Well, what to say? If you know, democracy is done by people who show up. So.
Exactly. It is not a spectator sport.
That's right. So, all right, I'll get off and let you get to another caller.
All right, Rod, thank you very much. I hope we get to talk again. All right, let's see here. We got, what does that say, Francisco?
Yeah.
How you doing, Francisco? You got about a minute. Talk to me.
All right. Well, I'll make it quick. It's not just you, John, but that last caller and every senator, everybody, they talk about this democracy that we have. We do not have a democracy.
No, I have a democratic republic.
Well, if you look at Merriam-Webster's dictionary, if you look at the Greek derivation, democracy is ruled by the government by the people, especially rule of the majority.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have that here. I wish we did, but we don't.
Okay.
And this idea's got to go. And I'll make the second point. Go see the Michael Moore film.
Okay.
It's really great.
All right, good. Thank you very much. I appreciate your input, and we'll talk again if with any luck at all.
All right.
Sure enough. All right. That's going to be it for the afternoon. Thank you very much, John. We're not going to reach you this afternoon. Be sure and call back in when we're in discussion again. Starting tomorrow, we are going to be fundraising here in executive session and on WMNF. You are invited to continue to support your radio station. We're going to be talking to you about that and looking for your input and your money because that's what we do. Thank you, Adam, for being in here this afternoon and delivering the goods.
Always great to be here.
All right, and stay tuned because Mr. Michael Hawkins is next door and he is going to bring you the All Souls edition of It's the Music, and what we're going to do is sign off.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
This is WMNF Tampa.